It is June 26th. I'm here with Mrs. Norma Lochner, and I am Brady Kreitzer. The time is 9:50 a.m. Okay, Mrs. Lochner, explain your affiliation with the university.
Well, it's been a long affiliation. I was born and reared in Slippery Rock, one of those rare birds. So I grew up just taking the college for granted. It was just part of the atmosphere and the environment. And my father always took me to the football games. Even when I was a little kid, we'd come up to the football game. And he never sat down. He always stood along the sidelines. And my mother worked here for many years. She was one of the people in the laundry, actually. So the college was part of our family life. And it was always assumed that I would go to Slippery Rock. That was just taken for granted that would be where I would go to school for higher education. And I did in 1944, which was a very low year for Slippery Rock. The college was very, very tiny. Like, we had maybe 350-some students on campus. And our freshman class was just very, very low. We had two boys in our freshman class. Joe Funfer and Hose Barkley, I think, were their names. Oh, dear. But the second semester I was here, it began to grow. And we got nine men altogether. So Coach Thompson thought he'd better have a football or a basketball team.
Yeah.
He had enough men he was going to play basketball. So we had a lot of fun with that. And mostly girls in their bobby socks and their swirl skirts. And we had a good time. But then came the deluge of men from World War II. And that was wild. Those fellas really put us on our merit. We'd just been having a good time for 2 years, and all of a sudden, boom. I guess it was 46. It was the big bulge, and you really had to work for your grades then,
mm-hmm.
because those guys were in there to get an education and to get out. And my husband only spent like three years here, and he had a full degree because he just would take extra classes. And I got out a semester early too because I read the writing on the wall and had to speed up. But that was my experience as a student here. But when we came back from Pittsburgh, where Carl was teaching and I was teaching at Coriopolis, we came back to Slippery Rock in 55. Dr. Spotts had put in a word for Carl when they needed good teachers. And so we came back to Slippery Rock, and for 4 years I was a housewife raising children. And I decided I better get to work too, because I was losing it. You know, you kind of get used to talking baby talk.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
So I went up and I heard of a job that was open because one of the teachers had run her car under a flatbed and was very, very badly hurt. And so she was in the speech field, which I was too. And in those days, to be a speech teacher, you had to have experience in the public schools because it was a teacher's college yet then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had Coriopolis training in my field, and so that stood me in good stead. So I was hired. Dr. Weisenfluh took me on, and I had 10 good years at Slippery Rock as a speech instructor. And I had a full complement of classes, but of course not the pay, but I got the work, and it was great. And I love the kids, I love the students. But there came a time when things got a little bit hairy for me, and my kids were growing up and needed me, and we were going hither and yon for all kinds of things. So I decided it was time to wrap it up. And so 10 years was enough. But during that 10 years, there were a lot of changes in Slippery Rock. because it was the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I remember especially was the morning I had a full schedule on for demonstration speeches, and I had three people show up for class. And I said, what's going on here? I said, where's the rest of this class? And here there was a demonstration around Old Main for women's rights and just to lower all the codes that they had around the school for various things. You couldn't be out after midnight, you know, and boys couldn't be in around the girls' dorm, and oh, there were just a lot of things that were real stipulations when you came to Slippery Rock, and the kids did not like that anymore. This was Freedom Days in the 60s. So they were out there demonstrating, and I said, and the next day there were about seven in class, and I thought, well, the worst of it's maybe over. And they had the Pittsburgh Press up here. Everybody was up here photographing and building it up, you know, like it was a big deal, and they were demonstrating. But they were demonstrating all over the country in those days. That's what you did.
Okay. You know, we have listed the three eras of Slippery Rock, the Teachers College, mm-hmm. The State College, and the university time. Do you remember the transitions between those periods? Because it seems like you were a student, you know, and then involved in some way in both of them.
Yes, it was a teacher's college when I was a student. And when I started to teach, it was still a teacher's college. But during that 10 years, it changed to a state college. And I think they had to bring in, like, the nursing school and maybe the ROTC, something. You had to have various education fields rather than just teaching mm-hmm. to become a state college, as I remember. But it was a great day. I remember they had a little celebration about turning into a state college, and they put up a stone kind of a marker out at Keister Road there, saying this is a state college, Slippery Rock State College now. And we never saw Teachers College again down on the Main Street, so we were a state college. And things did change, and they were working towards university status, and you could tell things were changing pretty fast. And yeah. That's one of the other reasons that I retired after 10 years, because I would have had to have gone back and got my doctorate, and at my age I wasn't willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to upgrade the whole system in order to get university status,
yeah.
And all the teachers had to look to their degrees and see what they could do to upgrade themselves. It's rather interesting.
You mentioned your department. Do you remember any changes your department went through specifically during this period?
We moved around a lot. We went from Old Main into, I think it was the Headland House, and then over into West Gym. We had offices in West Gym. And we had... I think Dr. Irv Kaur was the last head of our department that I worked under, and he was very, very knowledgeable. We had Ted Walwick, who was a good man. We had very good teachers. They were all, you know, very, very good in the field. But it was changing into a more of a communications field rather than just straight speech lecturing type. Speech for classrooms. It was changing more into, the modern age, you might say, with the television and the various electronic things coming in. I think that it had to change, and it did.
Was the do you remember the department's general feeling of that change? Were they supportive of it, or were they cautious of it?
Well, I don't think I was there, you know, when it really changed a lot. I was gone, I think, by that time. But, you know, we just accepted whatever came. It was it wasn't that big a deal for us.
Okay. What buildings did you work in when you worked here?
Well, those were the buildings. Old Main, our third floor Old Main was the speech area. And Headland House was just a temporary thing while they were building the new classrooms, and there were several being built in the 60s. And then we went over to West Gym, and we took over West Gym, second, first and second floors. We were on the second floor for offices, and we had nice offices up there, even though it was small. And we worked together very well, and then we had our classrooms downstairs.
Did you feel like, so you felt like they were pretty adequate for the sort of test?
At the times, it wasn't bad at all. We didn't have huge classes. We had big classes, but we didn't have huge classes. Like they did in Penn State and some of the other places we heard about. When the boys came back, it was pretty horrendous. But we had adequate space for classrooms, I think, for a while. But it was beginning to bulge when they got the new classroom buildings, the spots and the other ones down on the lower campus.
Okay. You said, you grew up in Slippery Rock your whole life, and we ask you first impressions of the college. I guess it's better to ask, what was your first impression from being, on the outside, and then when you became a student, you're finally on campus. Was it different for you then from what you thought it would be?
Yes, it was, because I was a townie. We actually were called townies, and we had a room underneath Old Main that the townies met in. And could socialize and eat their lunch or whatever they wanted to do. But it was hard to break into the cliques that were established in the actual college itself. And it took me a while to make friends with some of the ones who lived in the dorms. And once you did, once you were accepted by the people in the dorms, then it was the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
For a while there, when you were a freshman, you thought, oh, am I ever going to get to do what these girls are doing? Because it was altogether different kind of a life. And yet, I had no restrictions. They had all these 10 o'clocks and 12 o'clocks and all these restrictions that was not placed on me by my family. So
you lived at home instead of... You
lived on Elm
Street. It wasn't mandatory to live in the dorms.
No.
For a student.
No. Never. No, in fact, there were houses around who just took women students. One right directly across from Old Main, woman took only female students. A woman that lived across the street from us on Elm Street took only women students. And some took only men. My aunt on Elm Street took men students in her third floor. It was rather interesting when there weren't enough rooms up here. You had students all over town.
we have a part here. What changes did you see, and did you think they're for the better or for the worse? So, any changes that we have on campus now, things we take for granted because they've always been there. But
right.
Do you remember anything like that you saw that you liked or didn't like?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I worked on the committee with Maggie Mize and Marie McKay. That was one of the things I did when I was teaching. I worked on the committee to save the chapel because it was such a beautiful building. And it had such good memories for everybody in town. We had our first movie theater was in the chapel. And we would go up to that when we were just kids, and we would sneak in, things like that. And all those memories. And we had Vespers, still had Vespers when I was a freshman. That meant you had to come to Sunday night service so many times a month, I think it was. And I sang in the choir. I always was a singer. So I sang in the Vesper choir. And it was no chore for me, and that's how I met my husband. He saw me coming out of Vesper Choir and nailed me one night. And that was a long story. But we had Save the Chapel as a big alumni push. We wanted to keep that building so badly. But they found with a state inspection that there were termites. It was just termite ridden, I guess, and it was not safe. That was the story anyhow. We never quite believed it, but that was the story. They didn't want to save the chapel in Harrisburg. And they came and looked at it many times. But we sent out mailings and tried to get people to rally around. And there weren't that many alumni who were interested really in that. And we sent one mailing after another out to them, but couldn't get that chapel saved. So it's gone. And they used to have lovely ceremonies with their graduations. They would walk up the long walk, all the teachers in their robes, and so would walk up the long walk into the chapel. And that was just something that kind of lingers in your mind. see those.
Was there any talk of, you know, obviously it's a parking lot now, but did they say that there's going to be no attempt to rebuild it or anything like that? Did they say it's going to be parking?
Oh, they told us all kinds of stories. There was going to be a little chapel built in the middle of the lower campus that was to be bricks out of the old chapel, and the stained glass windows were saved. Well, they were actually saved, and we've used them, you know, in the alumni section of the union. That one room that you go into, it's like a reception room.
Okay.
Before you went to the University Union, has those stained glass windows are off in the old chapel.
Hmm.
And in the new alumni house, they have the old windows from the chapel. So a few things were saved, but it wasn't like saving the building, but it was something. Let's see, what else? Is there anything else? But that was the one I was most involved with because I was secretary for the alumni for 23 years. And Maggie Mizey was the treasurer. And Marie McKay was our staunch registrar up here who knew every student by name, could tell you what they had done, and knew if you needed a few more credits to graduate. She could tell you everything. She was a great girl, Marie McKay.
Okay, campus activities you're involved in. But you also just mentioned the Santa Chapel, but
yeah, alumni and the Vesper Choir. I was always in as a student, and even later I sang with them. Let's see. They wanted me to chaperone a sorority when I was teaching, but I had too many things on the docket. And I went over and talked to Dr. Weisenblue, and he said, "Oh, that's all right. Find somebody." He was so dear. He was a great guy.
And we actually have a little part about presidents. We're going to ask about a little later. So anything you can have there would be great. Real kind of a broad question, but what do you consider your accomplishments, you know, as a student and as a teacher here at Slippery Rock?
Slippery Rock, it gave me a great base because even in elementary and secondary school, we had teachers from the college teaching us. They were affiliated both places, so we would have people who taught history over here come and teach history. High school, English over here, English in high school. A lot of them traveled back and forth, and my education was, I must say, an excellent education. I didn't always take advantage of it the way I should, but I was in the upper fifth of my class, so I felt like I'd done something in high school. Well, then, in college, I knew all of those teachers, so that was a nice start too. Talk with them if I needed counseling, and Matilda Bailey was a great help to me. I was in English, and Matilda Bailey was a great help. Dr. Spots was a wonderful help, and I think that probably when I went to Pitt, I had no trouble at all with Pitt. I just kind of breezed through courses over there, and I just felt it was because of my Slippery Rock training. It was really good.
Okay. I kind of have to ask this because where we are, but you mentioned you're fairly close with Matilda Bailey. Do you have any specific memories about her or things about her that you can talk about?
Oh, yes. They're both dead, so I can talk about her. Oh, dear. This one boy who went into the service, never graduated. He went into the service when he was a junior, I think. I don't know how he did that, but he was asleep in class one day, and Matilda came in, and he was snoring away, and classes changed, and he was still snoring away. And Matilda said, "Just come in quiet." We all just tiptoed in, you know, and Howard was sitting there. And he woke up about two-thirds of the way through the class, and he didn't have a fit. And Matilda said, "Now you see what happens to people who sleep through classes." Oh, he was a real wonderful person.
What was she? What did she teach?
She was an English teacher.
English.
Uh-huh. And she wrote a great textbook too. She was a writer. Made a name for herself.
Hmm.
And she came back here as a dollar a year person for a while, just because she liked Slippery Rock and because they needed somebody. And she said, "Oh, I'll come back." And took a buck a year. She didn't need the money. It was published. author, you know,
yeah.
by that time. Wonderful person. Huh. And we had pulled some good people in during her time, too. Vincent Price, I remember we went to dinner one day with Vincent Price. She and the speech department had helped to get him on campus, so I was invited as a speech teacher. And it was very, very interesting.
Yeah,
he was quite a man.
Did you go somewhere on campus or local to eat, or what was that?
Oh, we were in Weisenflue.
Oh, okay. Vincent Price was in Weisenflue.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. As a teacher, do you have any best or worst moments that you can recall?
Well, I think I told you the one where I only had three people in class one day. That was one of the worst things that I think that happened to me. But
did you still teach that class?
No, I didn't even try. Because they have to, when you give a demonstration speech, you have to have an audience, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have feedback. And you couldn't tell the two other people in the class what kind of speech you were going to hear, what kind of feedback you had. So I said, just go home and meet tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then there were seven, so we went ahead and had class of seven. And build up. I don't know. I was trying to think what they... I think just seeing my students do so well. And I kept in touch with many of them after they left. And I think just knowing they were doing so well made me feel good. Yeah.
Okay. We mentioned presidents.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many presidents you were here for? If you can remember who they were, and do you remember anything about their personalities? Because anymore, you know, they're just pictures on the wall.
That's right. Dr. Houck and his family were here when I was a freshman. In those days, you had to go down a reception line when you were a freshman and meet all the faculty and the president and his wife, and everybody was in long dresses, tuxedos, and we had to wear long dresses, and it was a very formal affair, formal occasion. And Dr. Houck was very, very nice to everybody. He was always very receptive to the students. And his family, he had a nice family. Dr. Ince, I remember a little better because I was still in high school, but he was traveling around here with his little dog, cutest little dog, and everybody would stop and talk with Dr. Ince. And he was just really a remarkable man. But he only stayed a few years. He was getting older. They took him because they needed somebody right after the war, I guess it was. Yeah, it must have been. And they needed somebody that could hold the place together and start building, and he did exactly that. He was a very fine man. And then we got Dr. Houck, and he started building all the classroom buildings and things like that. He was a good man. I don't remember. I didn't know Dr. McMasters, who was the one who committed suicide. And we understood that he had acromegaly, that his brain and his bones were growing, and you know, it was causing him terrible pain and misery. But I didn't really know him. Let's see, who else? Dr. Weisenflue, who hired me and mentored me, actually. When I graduated, there were only 13 of us graduated in January of 48, because we came in here with that little class. So there were 13 of us, and I was the first one, I think, to get a job. Dr. Weisenflue pulled me into his office over in the lab school, and he said, I have a job down at Coriopolis, and it's for English. You want to interview? I said, I sure do. And I tore down there and interviewed, and I had that job. And I'm sure it was because of his mentoring, you know, and his advice to them that helped a lot to get that. And, of course, I think seven of the other ones got jobs, too, of that class of 13. So we were off and away.
Yeah.
The one sorrowful thing, though, was that one of our classmates went back, was called back to the service for Korea, and he was in the underwater can't think of the name of it. But he was in the demolition people that went underwater and, you know, planted bombs and picked up on bombs. And he was killed. It was just a couple months after he went in, right after his graduation. That was really a bad time for all of us, because we all knew him very well. But let's see. Dr. Weisenfluh. Trying to think. There were a lot of, I knew all the presidents, of course, because I lived here, and when we always, Carl and I always came up to campus to the events and the activities, even after we retired. And so we knew from the Alumni Association and our contacts that way, all of the presidents to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wattrell, was he in the 70s?
Dr. Wattrell, yes, and he worked really well with the alumni. But what did him in, I understood, was that little press lodge at the football field. He just was a great guy for sports, because he had been a coach. Wattrell had been a coach. And he had a lovely wife, Carol. And it was, anyhow, we understood through the alumni that he was putting a little bit more money into sports than he should. That he was giving a few scholarships that weren't quite cricket or something, I don't know. But when he built the press box, that was the last straw.
Harrisburg. Oh, that was him that did that up on the hill.
Yeah. Harrisburg decided, well, you know, that's a little pushing the button a little too far.
It says here, movers and shakers on campus. Do you remember anybody that everyone seemed to just, you know, gravitate toward and enjoy being around?
Well, in our department, Jan Burns was she just was the greatest teacher in our department when I was a student. And she actually lent us her apartment one summer, the summer we got married. She gave us her apartment because she was going on vacation for 3 months. We lived in my apartment, so we did. But let's see, Doc Spots, I would say, was one of the really good English teachers on campus. And he wrote a textbook also, which Carl and I edited and had an engine. That was nice. But he moved over to Ohio and then took a better job in Ohio. But he was a very fine teacher. We had music teacher, Gladys Arnold, George Miller, an art teacher, very good. People, and the teachers in those days knew all the students. When I was in school, they knew all the students. So they would have family gatherings for us. They'd invite you into their homes in the evening. And you'd sit around the fireplace and talk, you know, about all kinds of things. And that's, I don't know. I think probably Carl did a lot for the Alumni Association. Sure. And knew everybody. He made a point of, you know, knowing everybody. And Cliff Underwood, who followed him, was good, but he spent a little too much money he didn't have. And we had to get rid of him. But let's see. I think Sally Lennox really did an awful lot for the Alumni Association. She insisted on building a house for the alumni. And she knew how to press the buttons and the right people to call, and she didn't mind talking money. She was a really good person for that job at that time. And we got our house, and we got a lot of work done for the alumni, even though she pushed the wrong buttons also. But you know, when you're a mover or a shaker, you often make enemies.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it worked. She made a few enemies because she bucked the administration a little bit. And she got relieved of her duties.
Okay, do you have any other people that influenced you or were significant in your time here as a student or as a teacher?
Yeah, Gladys Arnold actually gave me personal instruction in vocal exercising and that kind of thing when I was singing. And we wouldn't take a dime for it. I mean, she just did it because she was a teacher here and she knew I liked to sing. And Gladys Sanderson, who wasn't even a faculty member, she was on the staff. She was the college organist when I was a kid and growing up. And she was also the organist for our church choir. And I sang in the church choir starting when I was 14. And she mentored me the whole way along. Just wouldn't give up. She had me singing when I was 50-some. Oh, gee. With another girl from Newcastle. And she just was a fine woman and somebody you could really look up to and appreciate. And Gladys Sanderson, Jan Burns in the speech department was a big help to me, and Doc Spots, Dr. Weisenflug. And there were just so many. You know, they were all very good people and very helpful.
Okay. Major events or activities while you're here, you know, like you said, we have a lot of buildings that, you know, from what I understand, weren't always there. So do you remember anything like that when those were being built? Anything going around campus about that?
I think when the classroom buildings were starting to be built, that was kind of traumatic. And being named, you know, for different people, that was nice. Eisenberg and Spots. And the one, Vincent, A.P. Vincent Science Hall, that was, I think, one of the nicest buildings that they built during that quick building era.
Yeah.
And they would have planetarium shows and invite the community to come to those. And that was a big deal because people were invited into the campus, and before it was kind of a separate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the library helped a lot too because they invited people to come use the library.
This library or Maltby?
Yes, this one. Maltby was not a community library to any degree that I remember. It was students and teachers that used Maltby. But this library always welcomed the community. And we didn't have a Sudbury Rock Library then. We do now.
Yeah.
Not much of a one, but it's growing. But because of that, I think a lot of people felt good about coming to campus. And then they started having concerts. And Blaise Scarlatti did a lot of that community building with his concerts. I remember the Miller Auditorium when that was built. Emma Guffey Miller came to Slippery Rock and they had conferences. And Emma Guffey was a power in Harrisburg. So we got a name for her, Miller Auditorium. And it was wonderful to do plays and things in the speech department. We had a good time with that. There were some shortcomings to it, but it was so much better than where we used to have plays, which was under the Maltby Library in the Sheedy Theater. It was so tiny, but we did some really nice productions under there, in spite of the fact it was small. But I don't know what they're using it for now, really. I think they did do some plays in
there. Yeah, there's still the seats on the stage in there.
Yeah, I haven't been down there for a long time. But that's good that they're using it because it was a more of a comfortable setting, you know, mm-hmm. in the small theater. You could do things in there like they're trying to do in Miller now by sectioning off for those in the round plays.
Yeah.
That's a good, but I mean, you don't feel like you're in a small theater. You just feel like you're in a big theater that's sectioned off. At least I do. I've been to many of them. That's the way I feel about them.
Well, what is it, if it says, if anything, do you miss about being here on a daily basis?
Well, I think I would say that communication with the students is the thing I miss the most. Although we do in our church adopt students, And I've always had adopted students in my life in our church in Slippery Rock. So at one time I had 9 students sit across the whole front pew. And that was nice. And we'd take them out to dinner. They'd come home to dinner, really. We'd take them out shopping or different things that they needed. And it was just a nice cooperative development when you left school to keep in touch with kids. Let's see. I never missed the activities because we still lived in Slippery Rock. We retired in Slippery Rock out on Newcastle Street. And we still kept in touch with the college things that were going on and would always come up to the activities. So I didn't really miss a whole lot. We always came to football games. We never sat in the press box. We always had our seat up in the top of the 50-yard line
there. Those are some cold days. Uh-huh. Football games.
Oh, yeah.
Other things that you would like current or future Rock community members to know? And how would you like to be remembered?
Well, it's a great place, I think, to send your kids. Now they were saying that they're getting, you know, the cream of the crop from high schools now, mm-hmm. And I always thought they did. You know, I always thought our kids were the cream of the crop. But I would recommend Slippery Rock, you know, and I do. To parents who have students in high school who are looking, and I think it's financially, you know, reasonable compared with other schools, and the I think the instructor, the professors are really, for the most part, better than they ever were, and that speaks well for the accreditation committees and those people who are trying to raise the standards. They're trying to get more doctorates, which may or may not be the idea, but I think it's a good school, and I think it's getting better for the ones who graduated because the name is getting known better, mm-hmm. And it's a good name. And there's been nothing really except that stupid thing about being a party school 5 years ago. There has been nothing to degrade it.
Yeah. And,
I think it's a good school. Yeah. Wouldn't hesitate to recommend it. It has a lot of potential. I think this equestrian center is a step in the right direction too, yeah. Because of the number of handicapped children. Seem to be a lot of that around, or maybe you just hear more about it.
Yeah, it's really a nice facility. They do, yeah. They do great things up there. I know a lot of people that actually work there, so
it's a step, a new step, but it's in the right direction, I think, mm-hmm. For our society. I think Slippery Rock's trying to stay on top of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there anything else that you would like to add that maybe we didn't touch on, or?
Glad to know.
All right. That was...